Welcome to our newest edition of RevGen's podcast, Built to Serve. This is where the social sector's best and brightest leaders, influencers, and funders come together to share stories and ideas on nonprofit revenue and how we can unleash the power of changemakers. I'm your host, Stacey Tubbs, and we will be providing you with new thoughts and ideas to fuel your mission. Our guest today is Brian Joseph, the founder and CEO of RevGen. Early in Brian's business career, he had the gift to be mentored by a successful business leader and investor. This led to Brian learning at a very young age to build national sales teams and to understand the how of building and growing revenue. Brian took those learnings and applied what was useful to help nonprofits build sustainable revenue. Welcome, Brian.
How did RevGen start?
Oh, wow. Nothing like a nice, easy softball to throw it up, right? that's through a lot of, like most things, it's just a series of twists and turns, and you don't necessarily set out, and it wasn't like this grand plan to just go do and, hey, we're going to solve revenue capacity in the social sector. So it was just a series of events. I had a mentor who taught me a lot about business. And during that, him and I started having conversations. I was fortunate at a very young age that he took an interest in me and let me lead different companies. And through that, we started having conversations about success and significance. He was almost 70 when he started to mentor me. So he was at a different stage of his life. And, you know, you realize you're here for more than just any one thing. And can we leave the world a little bit better place? So that was kind of the beginning of this journey. And then through different events, I left the for-profit world, decided, I wanted to figure out what I wanted to be when I grew up, and took some time. And then through that, I was introduced to the nonprofit space. And how much of this do you want to know?
I think that's good. And I know a little bit of it. So you did all the for-profit work.
Yeah.
And worked in some big growing companies.
Yep.
With a whole lot of sales in there is what I understand.
Yeah. I mean, so my mentor's name was RJ is what we called him, Ron Jensen. He was instrumental. So he built public companies insurance, did things in telecom, et cetera. So he had a 50-year experience. And his whole thing, his whole philosophy was really, if you can't build a national sales organization that you can scale, you can't scale a business, right? So what he taught me was just, here's how you build. You know, he always used to say, working in the system is different than building the system. And so I was fortunate that, you know, I took 50 years of collective experience that he had, and he poured it into my head the last 6 years of his life. And did that through a very practical way, meaning I got to turn around companies, I got to lead companies, I got to go consult with the public companies to teach some of their executive teams how to do stuff. So it was, it was just a lot of fun. I mean, but the whole thing was, you can have a better mousetrap, but if you're unable to sell the better mousetrap, you can't really build an organization, right? And these are sound principles. It's not just luck. It's not just, you know, hey, you go and these things do. There's a lot of luck, don't get me wrong, but, you know, there are sound principles that you can put into place that you can replicate. And I think he definitely demonstrated that and, you know, helped me see how to do that.
And I would say there is luck, and there's luck when that moment, that opportunity hits preparedness, and that's what gets you to success. So you were in the for-profit world. You started to make this change. Did you jump right into RevGen is a training company, or did you start somewhere else and
no,
making this path?
No. So it was, I had a engagement when I left the for-profit world. I took on a consulting engagement to help a foundation build out their grant making structure. So it helped them with their internal operations and their overall strategy. And through that, it was a 1-year engagement to kind of help those things. And during that time, they're a national funder who, want to see things scale. So with that, I started to sit in meetings and listen to their grantees who were struggling with things of how do they grow their organization. Revenue is always a top challenge. And by the way, when I say the term revenue, I'm agnostic as far as where it comes from. It can be earned, contributive, government, any dollar that comes in the door is how I define that. But you know, after 3 or 4 meetings, I started to say, hey, can I ask some questions? And when I asked the leadership teams of these various organizations, you know, what's keeping you up at night? It was always back to revenue. And, you know, through that, I was like, so talk to me more about that. And what I learned was basically a lot of the things that they were struggling with were the very principles that we knew how to put into place. So, you know, we started to give advice, not charging for it, just like, hey, just try these things. And they worked. And those organizations, the executive teams were like, wow, we've never thought about revenue this way. This is really powerful. And then, you know, through a series of events, had a colleague and friend who was like, hey, you need to go do this and solve this for the space. And I'm like, nope, I've made the promise. I will not do another startup. They're hard, they're difficult, and they're brutal, and they take forever, and they take twice as long as cost twice as much. But anyway, what we found was basically nobody else is willing to do it in the space. So if we wanted to see this change manifested, then we're going to have to go do it ourselves.
And so you went after it from a consulting perspective. At what point did RevGen, the organization, pivot from we're going to consult to we're going to be a training company?
Great question. So we launched RevGen as a consulting company in May of 2012. And basically, we spent the next 3.5 years consulting. And the only reason we did the consulting model is when we looked around, I said, hey, you know, Bridgespan, others seem to do well, seem to be the best demonstrated practices in this space. So it seemed to me that, you know, when you looked at the funding community, they hired consultants. Consultants worked with the nonprofit teams to solve things. So I was like, I've never been a consultant before as far as built a consulting firm, but, you know, what the heck, let's try it. And what I realized, so during those 3.5 years, was first of all, consulting is really expensive. You know, we had PhDs on our team because we got to do analysis. You got to do all these different things. It's expensive. If you work with 20 or 30 organizations a year, you're doing really well. And because of that, you're working with larger organizations. But most of the time when you leave, the tribal knowledge leaves with you. You try to impart some of that knowledge on the executive teams you work with. But so often it's like, hey, we hired you. Our funder or we are paying you a substantial amount of money to bring your team in. I appreciate the updates, but we want you to kind of go to work too, right? Well, unfortunately, that doesn't really, you know, using the old proverb, teach them how to fish. And basically, after 3 years, I woke up and I started to analyze our work, and I realized we were doing the same work over and over, and I was having the same conversations over and over. And I also realized that I can't scale consulting, right? To me, I couldn't solve this as a problem, and I think this is a solvable problem in the space. So we looked around, and I found that there was a couple different examples in the for-profit world. We found corporate executive board, the advisory board, and then an internal division at HP that kind of focused on, let's identify common opportunities and challenges of organizations. Corporate executive board is targeting really corporations. Advisory board is targeting hospitals and the healthcare system. And then HP obviously was internal, but it was to identify best practices around challenges and opportunities, and then how do we teach that and put case studies and trainings and workshops and whatever else out there. So when I looked at that, I was like, wow, if we did that, you know, we could, I think, drive the price way down, which is, you know, the opposite of what you usually hear. It's like, how can we charge more for this? And I feel like for this space, it's how can we make it where any nonprofit can access the tools and knowledge that we have? So how can we bring the price down and actually scale this? So I didn't want to have a company that used training to source consulting work. I know that's a model that a lot of people use. There's nothing wrong with that. I wanted us to be pure, where if we did this work, that we were literally imparting the knowledge to then get out of the way and let them do it. Because, you know, if I could be taught it, anybody can be taught it, right? So so we burned the boats and shut down the consulting practice at the end of 2015. And in January of 2016, woke up having no idea how to build a training company, and this is what we started to do.
So we're now 3 years past. January of 2020 is where we are today.
Yep.
Three full years beginning the fourth. So you've burned up the boats on all the consulting. What are you doing now as a training company? What are the products, and what are you seeing as the results?
It's been so much fun. So the first thing, I mean, I think you got to almost look back, right? So we do this change at the end of 2016. You know, I wake up and all of a sudden it's like, okay, we finished up our last consulting engagement. We now have no revenue, and we really have no product. So what the heck are we going to do? So basically, it was a long process just to figure out, you know, there's a lot of time and money that's been spent by universities and corporations, et cetera, to analyze how adults learn. And this term adult learning theory is something that's been proven and demonstrated, and I just had to learn a lot about that, right? So how do adults learn that's different than children, et cetera? But then we had to figure out, how do we put a product in place, and then how do we start to build kind of a framework that people can understand? So adults learn best from frameworks, right? So when you're a practitioner, it's one thing to be able to say, okay, I'm going to go take over this company. I kind of know what to do. It's different than me saying, okay, I know what to do, but I need to teach you how to do it, right? It's a,
there need to be words.
Right. And frameworks, and how do I actually demonstrate it so you can take this knowledge that's instinctive and stuff in your head and actually impart it on somebody else.
Yeah.
So, you know, 2016 was a big, learning year just on how adults learn, and I found this great term called instructional designers that I did not have a clue as what that was. So it took me a lot of time just to figure out. In that time, we tested kind of and we built out a framework. We use a house as an analogy for how nonprofits can think about revenue, and I think it applies, again, nonprofit, for-profit is relevant, but we use a house as an analogy. We always say the roof of the house is what is we call revenue skill sets. So it's really built for the front line, in this space, fundraiser. So it's focused on things like, how do I engage my donors? How do I steward the relationship? How do I move them through my pipeline, et cetera? It's really important. But you don't start building a house at the roof, right? The walls of the house are what we call revenue management. It's really where we got hired a lot of times to come in as consultants. And it's the, how do I go through the activities as a, you know, chief development officer and manage my day-to-day frontline fundraising activities? How do I build a training program? What CRM system should I be using? What do my reports need to look like for my daily operations versus my board, et cetera? Again, really important.
Yeah.
But not where you start. The piece that we felt was fundamentally missing was the foundation. And we call that revenue infrastructure. And it's made up of five elements. It's revenue model. Do you understand where your money's coming from today? And where do you want it to come from in the next 1 to 3 years? Things like, who owns the relationships? Is it repeatable, reliable, et cetera? Once we have identified that, we move on to revenue strategy. So, you know, what are the people, processes, and systems I need in place to actually execute against this shift in my revenue model or growth in my revenue model if I have program growth I need to cover? Once I go through the revenue strategy, I need to move into my organizational design, which is, okay, now that I've identified my revenue model and I kind of see where I want to go in the next 1 to 3 years, and I identified my revenue strategy and hopefully it aligns to my organizational strategy, what do I need to design? Like, what skill sets do I need on my team to be able to execute against that? Who's going to wake up every day thinking about those different revenue streams? And if I don't have the right people or enough people, then I got to make forced choices, right? I can't do everything. Once we move through organizational design, kind of talk about the human element, we move on to the fourth element, which is what we call resource allocation. And this is different than what you see in the space today. It's not GAAP. It's not for external funder reporting. This is for internal management purposes only. And it's an analysis to say, when 100 pennies come in the door, how do I allocate those 100 pennies to program? I get it. We're mission driven, right? We want to do more of the great work that we're doing, regardless of what that is. But I also have got to invest in my operations. I still need HR, IT. The trains need to run on time. And I need to invest in my revenue muscles. If I'm not investing the financial capital there, I can't have the human capital, back to org design, to execute against the revenue strategy, to see the shift in the revenue model. So they kind of build. And then the fifth element that we've built out in this framework is what we call revenue culture, right? So again, because we're so program focused and mission focused in the space, it's sometimes easy to lose sight to say, you know, if we just didn't have to do the revenue generation stuff, it's the icky stuff. Well, every organization has a revenue culture, whether they know it or not, and it's the intentionality. And can we remove that stigma and that bias and instead say, hey, let's draw a line of sight and be intentional about how we recognize, celebrate, et cetera, to draw a line of sight between our revenue team and our program team to kind of elevate it. So we embrace it and we're good at it and we tell our story. So just building that framework took a lot of time, and it was a lot of luck that actually came up with that. But that's how we did it, right? So it's just like that framework allowed us to then move into, okay, now that I have a framework and an analogy, people can start to understand what it is we're talking about.
Yeah.
So that was a big leap for us.
Yeah. So you've worked through creating this framework and creating this structure. Today, how are your participants, members, and clients accessing that?
Okay, so this is a great question. So there's a lot of different layers of that question. So that's not the only thing we do. You know, we started there. We want to be able to teach this revenue capacity building through a cohort. So we built a 3-day cohort. When we looked at the content that had to be taught, we looked at the, again, back to the adult learning theory and what a normal adult can take in any 4-hour chunk of time. So we ended up building out that framework because you got five elements, you have to level set at the beginning. So it basically became three full days of training. And then what we realized is the most effective trainings were where the participants have some time off, right? Because you hit this threshold where the bucket's full. Mm. And if you want me to come back tomorrow morning, my bucket's already full. It's not going to drain overnight, yeah. Right? It takes time for me to absorb that. So we actually built a three-day style cohort where we have a full day of training, 2 weeks off, another full day of training, 2 weeks off, and the third and final full day. And we deliver that. We call it our fuel series. We deliver that over those 3 days to executive leadership teams of nonprofits. So that was another key element, right? We didn't want to have a train-the-trainer model. So we didn't want just one person to come in because we've all been there.
So like the chief dev.
Yes, we didn't want just the chief dev. We wanted, basically we ask a nonprofit, when you're making strategic decisions for your organization, who sits around the table from the executive leadership team, right? My CEO / executive director, my chief dev, my head of operations, finance yeah. program, you know, everybody's going to have their different people. And they're like, oh, and we try to invite the top three up to five. I'm always cautious on the five, but three or four up to five executives to put them around the table. That way you're not delivering this training in a train the trainer type model. They're actually going through it together. And we always say leadership teams that go through there end up with a common language, common framework, and the dedicated time to dig in, right? So we teach that over the 3 days, over basically a 30-day period, so they have time to actually work on their organizations, right? So we always say work on your organization, not just in it, to give them time to actually move the needle, as so to speak, on core root causes of things versus symptoms. And I know probably the next question is what do you mean by that?
Well, I was going to give you about 20 seconds to take a sip of your coffee. And then thanks for that softball, Brian. What do you mean by that?
Well, so, you know, the symptoms versus root cause, which is, goes back to the framework, right? A lot of times, most of the solutions in this space, when we analyze the landscape, are really focused, probably 80% are focused on the roof of the house, and they only identify fundraising, right?
So skill sets.
So definitely on the skill set. So frontline fundraisers, right? Again, how do I engage my donors, steward the relationship, et cetera? And there's everything from free webinars to expensive consultings, varying degrees of effectiveness across the board. Again, it's really important. The consulting firms tend to be boutique and focus on that the walls of the house, right? So it's the CDOs, et cetera. But the what we often found, so we got hired a lot when we were consulting for those walls of the house, and we'd get calls like, here's an example of a symptom versus a root cause. Brian, you know, you see the statistics. We've turned over 3 chief development officers in the last 4 years. We think we're just really not that good at how we're doing the interview process. So can you guys come in and help us design a better interview process? Should we be using, you know, a culture profile, a personality profile? Do we need to hire an outside firm to help us screen them better? You know, what do we need to be doing different? And I would sit down with them and I'd talk to the leadership teams and we'd say, well, that may be the case. But actually, in my personal opinion, I think you're treating the symptom versus the root cause. Because what you've already described, you guys are thoughtful. In the last 2 hires, you've been really thoughtful, right, about how you go about doing the interview process. But I think the interview process is the symptom and not the underlying root cause. So what I mean by that is you're hiring a major gifts officer and you go through and you describe how you did the interview process. But then when we say, okay, now pause, you hired that person, give me their first year KPIs that you need for them to be successful. And it's nothing to do with major gifts. Yeah, it's a little bit of that, but it's also, and we need them to build a system for us that we can track the CRM system. We need to have them do board engagement. We also need them to run an event. And can they hire some other people? I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You just hired somebody who's really good at major gifts, and you never even looked at these other skill sets or told them these are the other things that you need. So is the root cause, I'm not really clear on my revenue model, my revenue strategy, therefore my org design, mm-hmm. I'm hiring the wrong person for the wrong role. Another example of a symptom versus a root cause, the turnover, right? Back to that. Maybe you're hiring the right person, maybe you even got them in the right role, but maybe your revenue culture isn't there. Meaning, I bring them on, I put them out in the corner and say, hey, your goal is to go raise $5 million this year for the organization, and next year is going to go to $5.5 million, and you don't really engage them, so they always just feel like, hey, you know, I just get told these things, and my culture doesn't really embrace me, it doesn't support me, and it's just a heavy burden, and you just burn them out. Mm-hmm. So there's different things that we try to analyze, and I would say probably a solid 70 to 90% of the time we're addressing symptoms versus root causes.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Kind of, it sounds kind of like for some of these chief development officers or, you know, other resources, that it's that idea of stick them in the corner and ignore them, right?
Oh, yeah.
Covered in mud and
yep.
And that
the mushroom effect.
The mushroom effect. Great. So it sounds like that has huge impact, Brian, for the groups that you're working with, to get the time, the framework, the wording, and then just focus on what's upstream, which is the root, and not what's popping up in front of them right today.
Yep. Go ahead.
Oh, so that sounds great. But I think we talked about that there's more than that in the RevGen world.
I was going to say there is. So with fuel, we started with a 3-day. And basically what we learned through that, Stacy, was different size nonprofits provide different value because we don't do it in a cohort style. So we put up to 6 to 8 organizations in the room. So you got the leadership team. So you got 25 to 30 people, all executives running different nonprofits who are participating in this experience. Most of it is with their leadership teams digging in, but there's also call outs, right? And then during breaks, you're hearing like, wow, I just heard Beth talk about X, Y, or Z that we're trying to think about. I need to go get, you know, there's knowledge there and there's perspective and experience. And
so sharing.
And sharing on organizational size, right? So if I take organizations that are what I call emerging, so under $1 million in expense budget or revenue, and I put them in with organizations that are over $1 million, there's a big disconnect, right? The challenges are a little bit different.
Yep.
I want to get there, but I'm not there
stages.
Yet. Right. So we realized we had to separate those. So we run the 3-day fuel series for organizations of $1 million up to just call it 30 million. And I know that seems like a big jump. People are like, really? But when you look at a lot of their challenges around revenue, they're the same between those chunks. And we're now launching a 2-day training and for what we call fuel for emerging organizations, which is basically revenue expense budget of 250 to a million. And the reason we're only doing 2 days on it is when they're smaller emerging organizations, they don't need a full 4 hours on, you know, organizational design because they're just getting going. They don't need a full 4 hours on resource allocation, et cetera. So we think we can condense the training to 2 days. But so we separated those two. So the trainings are the same framework, same model, but just different timelines based on the size of the organization. But the key thing that came out of it, so this is back to RevGen and what we're trying to do, so the podcast and how we get this out there to solve the problem, is listening to the nonprofit executives when they went through this cohort style, and this started day one, the first time we even beta tested the pilot of our cohort training, we had executives that came up to us afterwards that were like, okay, you need to keep hosting these type of meetings where we get together to have honest conversations with one another, because there's so much knowledge. You know, we know each other, we're in the same city, but we never really get to have a chance to talk, to actually dig into our opportunities and challenges, to share best practices and knowledge, unless it's, you know, we get together at an event or a funder convenes us and we're trying to grab a beer or a glass of wine or a cup of coffee and we talk for a few hours. But how does RevGen help us really have these meaningful conversations? So I'm a little bit slow. Took me a little while. At first thing I did is I'm like, well, you can do that. You know, you don't need us to do that. Just get together. And it took a gentleman by the name of Bob who hit me over the head and he said, quit trying to be like everybody else in the space. Free does not always mean better, right? If you have, we're already overworked. Our cups are drained. Our tanks are often empty. As leaders of these organizations, whatever respective role, CEO, CDO, et cetera, you know, for us to get together and organize this, it may happen once or twice and then we're busy and we're off and running. Can't RevGen create an experience for us that's meaningful, that's powerful, that creates what you do here in the cohort, but it's ongoing? So after hearing that multiple times, we look back and we said, okay, what's going on here? So we stepped back and we looked at the space and we did some research and we did a lot of interviews and we found out that there was a big need in the market that, you know, we used to see it even in our work consulting of, man, I feel like we're always reinventing the wheel for organizations. And why? Because there's so much talent and knowledge and passion around different things. And how can we have these conversations? So as you were well aware, Stacy, we launched just over 18 months ago, a beta pilot of what we call R-squared executive forums. And they are executive peer groups that are 4 hours once a month, 10 times a year. And we put 12 or 13 executives with the same functional role. So executive directors together, chief development officers together, CFOs together, chief program officers together. And we put them in there with a professional facilitator with a process that you designed that helps them move through their opportunities and issue processing to really move forward, right? To kind of fill their tanks as leaders, to help them not make the same mistakes that others have made. Because when you look inside a room, you take anybody, right? Take 12 or 13 business leaders, executives, I don't care if it's professors, and you put the cumulative experience, you're literally going to end up with hundreds of years of experience versus one individual. And 12 minds is always going to come up with different ways of view things and process things and go through things than one mind. So, you know, what we're trying to do, so in launching R Squared, was really to serve an unmet need of the market. Now, you were great, because when you and I talked, I said, hey, we need to do this around revenue because that's what we're about. And you're like, yeah, but as executive leaders of nonprofits, if they have a program issue, an operational issue, or just a personal issue, and they can't process that, then their revenue generation is going to suffer as well. And I'm so glad that you talked me into that, because at R Squared is really that safe space, no funders in the room, everything stays there in their peers, that allows them to, again, start to fill their tanks. And, you know, it's been, so what we do as far as back to the product side is we try to listen to the needs of the market, identify if there's somebody out there who's already doing something great, we don't want to redo what's out there. We want to create an ecosystem that we can point people to. But if there's an unmet need, especially around revenue capacity, then we're going to address it.
Nice. Very nice. And so it sounds like RevGen's clients are nonprofits.
Yes.
Sounds like they are growing and getting some big things done in the world.
They are.
Knowing that this is a revenue issue that we're focused on in RevGen, what else is happening in the nonprofit sector?
So funders, right? So, I mean, our primary customer is the nonprofit executives, leadership team, right? But funders play a key role in that. You know, there's the power dynamic that we kind of talk about, we don't talk about. But at the end of the day, we're all on the same team, right? Funders are trying to help nonprofits solve a social issue that's not being addressed either through government or through the capital markets, right?
Yep.
You're not going to see that go away. I think the problem's exacerbating, getting worse. But, you know, funders are also frustrated in the aspect around the revenue stuff, because when you look at the top challenges of nonprofits, you know, the aspect when I sit in funder conversations is always, I've coined it the dependency effect, right? They're like, well, we sponsor work, and then they always come back to us, and what if we want to move on to other organizations because there's so much need? So our question is always, well, I see that you do theory of change, you do some operation stuff, but what do you really do to help support these organizations through, you know, unrestricted grants, through revenue capacity building, to help them actually build out the revenue capacity that they need to eliminate that dependency effect? So what we've started to do is partner with foundations and funders who are like, wow, RevGen needs to be a core piece of our strategy, because one, you're much cheaper than consulting. So we can put them through your framework. They can learn a new way to think about revenue. When they leave, again, the executive teams have a common language, common framework, dedicated time to really dig in around the revenue, and they're much more intentional about it. And then partner with us with the executive peer groups gives those, you know, it's a leadership development aspect. You give these executives a space that they can go and get through their challenges, opportunities, et cetera, with their peers in a safe way that they can refill their tanks, that really makes them more effective leaders. So by partnering with the funding community, we start to want to have them help relieve the financial burden. As much as we try to drive the cost down as much as we can, we still have to be self-sustaining too, right? So to drive the price point down, so then the nonprofits either invest part of their money and most importantly their time to go through these things to really benefit them. So we're trying to go change the behavior of the funding community to say, hey, there are solutions out there. Don't be frustrated by this too. Invest in these type of things. Don't restrict it just to program, as well as working with the nonprofits. And then obviously just sector building at large, right? Start to get rid of some of the biases, this whole 20% stuff that we all talk about, you know, we all laugh about, but it's still real that nonprofits have to deal with. But how do we start to change that mindset to, again, we all want to run efficient organizations, but the different life cycles, different stages, we may have to invest more or less, et cetera, to have a ongoing organization.
So knowing, Brian, who you are and that you're just a little driven over moving things forward, RevGen must have a BHAG. What is it?
Oh, yes. So if you go back to, you know, I think we can solve this. I think we can solve this in
this being revenue. A problem, yes. In the nonprofit space.
Yes, I think we can solve revenue capacity as the top four challenges, according to the NFF study, top four challenges of top four of the five of nonprofit leaders. I think this is something that's solvable in our lifetime. And I think some of it even goes back to the for-profit space. I mean, when you look at, there's a organization that has 11,000 of the top companies and says that 7% of CEOs come through the sales function, right? So this is not just a nonprofit issue, but nonprofits, we often tell them, be more like a business. But, you know, understanding how to build the revenue capacities, that you don't teach it in business school. We still focus on the roof of the house there. So I think we can solve this. So our BHAG, back to your question, is how do we start to get to 10% of the nonprofit executive team population who are trained in our revenue framework and 10% who are participating in R-squared executive forums on a monthly basis. One, the data that we can get to help drive that, but two, what that starts to do for the sector at large. So how do you do that, right? And why 10%? How you do that is you begin with a regional strategy. So you condense it down into major metropolitan areas and work out from there. And then eventually we'll do things online. Podcasts is another way, webinars, et cetera, to get it out there. But by condensing down to a region, you know, a lot of funders fund on a regional basis. So you start to partner with the funding community. So they want to see your work as part of their grant making. It's not a separate thing. It's just a natural. Every time we give a grant, we want to invest in the leaders for R-squared or in the revenue training through RevGen. And the 10% comes from, you know, tipping point out of Maxim Gladwell, right? So when he wrote that, was it 2010, 2011, maybe nine? You know, he talked about any social change takes at least 10% of the population to start. So if you have 10% of the population that starts to be, who thinks about revenue in this way, who addresses revenue with the root causes and stuff, you start to make a social change. Now, the 10% is the start, right? So there's been a lot of studies that have been done since then that show for a sustainable social movement, you've got to get to 25%. So, you know, I would say our BHAG to start with is let's get to 10% of the population. What's that mean? If you look at like the New York City market has roughly 12,000 nonprofits, greater than $250,000 when you take out some of the little league teams and things like that. But roughly 12,000 nonprofits, that means we want to train 1,200 in the greater New York City region. If you take that number times, you know, three or so, you get to literally a couple thousand plus nonprofit executives that you'd have an R-squared there. That starts to make real difference. Now, the other BHAG that starts to become out of that. So if you take the power of not only training a different mindset for nonprofit leadership teams as they go to other organizations, as they start new ventures, as they merge or they do whatever, this thinking always takes hold is what our hope is. So that's part of the BHAG. But if we take then and park that and say, let's just also look at R-squared, right? So if we're convening literally hundreds of executives, if not thousands of executives on a regional basis every month, what's the power in that, right? Mm-hmm. So we just saw the recent article that came out from the Chronicle of Philanthropy here in August, which again stated the same thing that we saw 6 years ago when the underdeveloped report came out from the Haas Junior Fund, which was basically, you know, there's a huge disconnect around revenue. The top challenges are still there. Roughly 50% of development directors are going to be leaving their jobs in the next 2 years or leaving the sector altogether. Leaders, executive directors are burnt out. You know, they are frustrated by this topic, et cetera, et cetera. But when I looked at that, two things came to mind. One was nothing's changed in 6 years, right?
Almost which is sad.
Right. So we talk about the problems, but we don't provide the solutions. Hopefully we can provide the solutions. But the other thing that I noticed was I'm like, there's just over 1,000 respondents to drive that data.
For the whole of the survey.
And it took us 6 years to do it. So unless somebody's willing to invest in the research, et cetera, to go get a firm, to go out and do the individual work, et cetera, it's expensive to do that, right? So now back up a second, come back to what we were just talking about. If we can take these R-squared executive forums, which 12 executives at a time who are working with one another to get different perspectives, to help each other with their social causes in their business, right? So to help them work on each other to help empower their organizations. But when you start to aggregate those, what then happens? So if all of a sudden you take those 12 and you take that times 20 or 30 of them participating here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, you have several, you know, 300 plus, you do that in New York. All of a sudden, what can we start to see and hear that occurs on a micro basis? So what's going on in a region that others may not don't look at the patterns for? And then what's going on nationally as we compare the patterns? As we do the surveys on a quarterly basis and we compare our CEOs in different cities, you know, Seattle, Los Angeles, Dallas, Atlanta, et cetera, and we compare those to, again, on the micro basis, individual region basis, but also across the country, what are the patterns? Like, what are we seeing and hearing? And not just about revenue. Right? Is there a change in, is there stuff that they're concerned with on the government side? Is there things that they're seeing that's coming through on the need around poverty? So what happens with that? So the BHAG on that becomes, we end up with a pulse of this sector real time that we can then put out there through podcasts or articles to hopefully drive other changes that'll empower these great nonprofit leaders to do even more.
That sounds like a BHAG, Brian.
I think it's doable, though. I think we can do it in short order. I'm hopeful.
So it almost sounds like, you know, you talked about 2012 and then, you know, at the end of 2016. So really 3 years going after it this way kind of sounds like RevGen's been an overnight success.
You and I both know better than that. I always love that, right? And I think anybody always hears that. What they always say, an overnight success is 20 years in the making.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a journey. I definitely say it's been an ass whipping in some days more than others, but it's not an overnight success by any means. It's the constant focus. A couple things. So you have to have, you know, you and I have talked about this. You have to have the three windows line up. You have to have the opportunity that has to present itself, right? And I do believe a lot of people will look at challenges, say, oh, wow, that's a challenge. And others will look at it and say, that challenge is an opportunity, right? So when you look at revenue capacity in the nonprofit space, back to the articles we were just talking about, right? Challenge, challenge, challenge. But what are the solutions? So that presents an opportunity to solve a problem. The second window that has to line up is you didn't have to have the means to go after it, right? You have to have the funding. We're fortunate at RevGen that we have that, so we can go actually work on this every day, wake up to go do that. And then the third element you have to have is the right people. Right? And finding the right people who want to participate in this journey with you to go do it and have the different skill sets to do it. So we've been fortunate that the opportunity presented itself, obviously, first. Money comes then after that to help provide the time and space and resources you need to go work with it. And then because of the mission and the work and that we're kind of making progress, we've been fortunate to find great people like yourself who are willing to, you know, play in the sandbox with us. So having those three windows line up, that's always hard. Just getting those, because any one of those misses, right? You can have all the money in the world and great people, don't have the opportunity. Okay, next. You can have the right opportunity and the right people and no money. Same thing.
Yep.
You can
doesn't
have
fly.
Yeah, and you can have the right all the money and the right opportunity and not the right people, and it doesn't work either, right? So we've been fortunate that those have been lining up, but you know, we've always been true north has been, how do we serve the nonprofit leaders? What can we do? We're hitting on a real need with the revenue capacity. We've had to go through the work of proving that this actually resonates and it works. And, you know, this space tends to move a little slower. It's got to be just like a lot of things. You got to prove it to me. But I feel like we're now starting to get that momentum. The flywheel's starting to turn, right? To use the BHAG term. But we still got a lot of work to do. It's still going to be, we need partners on the funding side. We need to get our voice out there more for nonprofits to find us, you know, put their hand up so we can come find them so they can find us.
Brian, what one last thing do you want to leave me and any of our listeners with?
Biggest thing I want to leave them with is come join the community. It takes a lot of people. It takes a lot of effort. You know, we need more people around this community to talk about this topic, to help us change this. But if we can address some of the challenges that we're trying to face, we can empower those change makers to really change the world. So come see us, join us if you haven't.
Come be part of the movement.
Absolutely.
Brian, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Stacy.
For anyone who would like to connect with Brian Joseph, he can be reached at bjoseph@revgengroup.com, R-E-V-J-E-N group. Thanks for joining.